And welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta here, Dana Osband. Our daf of the day, Masechet Bava Metzia, daf Yud Dalet, page 14. I want to look at the case beginning on the bottom, towards the bottom of Amud Aleph. Amar Abaye. Abaye has a case the following. Reuven Shemachar Sadele Shimon. So these are pseudonyms, right? That Reuven sells a field to Shimon, Be'achrayut, with this property guarantee, meaning that Reuven has a creditor, that there's a lien already on the property when he sells it to Shimon. Now, theoretically, Shimon would not buy this unless he felt he could afford to pay off the creditor. But so what happens in this case? Uva balchov de Reuven, the creditor of Reuven, meaning Reuven's out of the picture now, but he comes to Shimon, the katarifle mine, and he comes and takes back that field, repossesses it, right, from Shimon, because he had that right, because Reuven sold it at, you know, out from under this lien to begin with. Dinahu da azel Reuven omishtai dina bahadeh. So the halacha is that Reuven can go back to the creditor, to this guy to whom he owed money, and negotiate and can fight with him, whatever. Velo matzi amarle, and the creditor cannot say to him, lav bal devarim didiat. He can't say, the creditor can't say to Reuven, I don't have to deal with you because I took that field from Shimon, meaning Reuven is still the important player in this transaction. Whatever, there's several different parties here, even though the field is taken from Shimon because it was Reuven's debt. Reuven can then come and, you know, fight with a creditor on behalf of, I guess, getting the field back. The Amarle, the Mafkat Mine, Alai Didi Hadar, right? Reuven can come and say to the creditor, listen, what you took from him comes back to me. I sold the field to Shimon with a guarantee. So you can't say that I have nothing to do with this, right? Like, I am very much part of it because I'm the one who owed you the money to begin with. Now we've got another version of this text about what Abaye said, namely, even if Reuven sold that field to Shimon and there wasn't a proper guarantee on it, right? The Amarle, and even then still, Reuven can still go back and have his day in court. He can negotiate about this debt that he owes, right? The Amarle, lo nichal lid lahave l'shimon taromet alai. Meaning he can say to the debtor, to the creditor, the person who loaned him the money to begin with, that establishes this lien, he can say, no, I don't like the fact that Shimon would then have a grievance against him, right? Because he sold him this property where it's then going to be repossessed. And if I were Shimon, I'd be pretty peeved, right? So Reuven can go to the creditor and say, listen, I'm going to pay you. Let's get that field back to Shimon. Ve'amar Abaye. Abaye says, you know, now still we're talking about this Reuven Shimon case. How so? Reuven Shemachar Sadele Shimon Shelo Ba'achrayut. In this case, he doesn't give any guarantee on the property. Ve'atzu Alea Asikin. And now what happens? People come forth and they are going to clamor, right? Basically, that they are going to claim that they have the right to the field, or that Reuven's ownership of the field is not legit. So as long as Shimon hasn't taken possession of the land, then Reuven can kind of come out, can cancel the transaction, you know, go back on the deal. But once Shimon does take possession, then Reuven can't go back on it. And then you're going to have an issue with the people coming and claiming that they have entitlement to the field. The Amarle, Chaita, Dekatre, Sav, Art, Vekabalt, Me'ema, Tayavia, Azaka. Meaning, so what happens here? Excuse me, right? The seller can say that, like, purchasing this land was like that. I'm sorry, the buyer can say that. Let me read this carefully. One second. I want to make sure I've got it right. To Amar Le, right? He can say to him, the seller can say to him, the buyer, you're purchasing something where you don't know the content and you don't know whether it's going to be worth anything. But then once you knew about it, v'kabalt, and you accepted it, right? Then you purchased it without a guarantee, meaning you knew that, Shimon, when you came into this deal, then Reuven can't take it back, but Shimon also can't walk away. Did I say that wrong the first time? That Shimon could walk away from the moment that he, until he's fully taken possession. Let me explain this all again. I apologize, people. Just I want to make it clear. I'm not going to read it all inside again. But the point is that until the point that Shimon takes possession of the field, he could get antsy over the fact that there's no guarantee over the potential for a lien on the land. Then he can say, I don't like this feeling of I'm not sure what I'm getting. And he can walk away to avoid having to accommodate a potential lien on the land. But once he takes possession, and then he discovers, uh-oh, there's a lien, it's too bad, he can't walk away. And the example that's given is like this example of a tied sack, of a bag, where you don't know what's in the bag, you don't know what the purchase is, but you accepted it. So once you've done that, you can't walk away from it. And then the question is, at what point does he take possession? Right, that if he walks around the borders of the field to inspect them, then that's his, like, he's casing his own property. And at that point, he's taken possession. And again, we have another version of the story here, another version of the text. Even if he bought the field with the guarantee of the property, not that he didn't know what he was getting. He knew that there was a lien. He knew that Reuven has to protect against the lien, the debtor calling in the lien. The Amalei, achvai tarpach v'ashalem lach. Right, because then what happens? The seller can say to him, "Show me your that you have this document to repossess the land," and then he can go back to Reuven, right? And Reuven is theoretically supposed to pay Shimon, right? Because he doesn't want to cancel the whole thing. He doesn't want to reimburse Shimon unless it becomes clear that he has to. So the Iged the Amres in both of these cases kind of flip the original text on its head. And I feel like if we were writing an academic research paper on this, we would look at the manuscripts of this Daf of the Gemara to see exactly like why are these passages recast in an opposite way. Very often, Iked da Amri says like it was a different rabbi who did the who had this position, and it's a very minor shift in the text. Both of these statements are significant rereadings of the text because it actually says the opposite of what the claim that it said to begin with. And I don't have an explanation for that beyond the fact that I'm sure that there is some story there in the manuscripts of the Gemara.
I think that's a great point. Like usually Eka Damri is like a very subtle difference, or it even can be sort of the same point, maybe with one word changed or who said it was a little bit different, but it's generally the same point. And here it's very, very different. So I think that was a great, you know, a great observation.
It makes it confusing though.
So, yes, it does make it confusing, but because it's not really an Eka Damri, right? In a certain way. You know, like it in a way, it's really, why don't we just say it's another opinion?
Right. It's a different case. Let's look at this case instead. Right. Exactly.
All right. I'm going to move on to something on Amud Bet, which is really what most of Amud Bet deals with, which is a discussion of the rights of a purchaser of stolen land. So Itmar was set. Hamocher sadeh lechaverov. Somebody sells a field to another person. The name say chain ashalo. And then it's discovered that the field wasn't his right to sell. He couldn't actually sell it. Rav Amar Yesh Lo Ma'od, the purchaser has the right for compensation from the seller for any money he paid for the field. V'yesh lo shavach. And he also has a right for compensation for the seller for any improvements he made to the field. So in other words, the idea is that basically the most common case would be you found out somebody buys land, and then you find out later that the seller actually stole that land. So you never should have bought that. You couldn't really buy that land. So Rav is basically saying here, not only can you get money back for purchasing the land, but if you did anything to improve the land, you can get payment for that. Ushmuel ma'ot yeshlo, he is right for compensation for this, you know, the money that he lost by buying the land. Shevach einlo, but he doesn't have a right for compensation for improvements. So interestingly, the Gemara is going to start by analyzing Shmuel's opinion. Bao mine me Rav Huna. So they inquired of Rav Huna, perish lo et shevach mahu. What is the law where the seller explicitly states to the purchaser that he would compensate him for improvements? Meaning, if let's say the contract said that if the field was stolen property, you know, could the purchaser collect compensation for improvements from the seller if it was explicitly said so. Tamat Shmuel Mishum de lo peir shevcha. So the reason of Shmuel that he doesn't collect improvements from the seller is because the seller didn't explicitly accept responsibilities for improvement if the land was taken back. But here in this case, since he explicitly accepted responsibility, he must compensate the purchaser. Or perhaps the reasoning of Shmuel is, Keva de Lesle Karka, since the land is not the seller's, right? The money is basically, in a way, it's a loan, right? He doesn't really, it's not really his money. Mechezi Karivis. So if he were to pay for improvements, it would appear as if there was interest on the loan. Now, this is something that we've seen before, this Mechzi Karivis, right? This idea that, you know, something looks like compensation. Something looks like, interest. And this seems to be a theme throughout, you know, the Gemara in general. We don't want anything to ever look like it's interest. So even if the seller explicitly said they'll compensate the purchaser for improvements if the land ended up being stolen, right? It still looks like interest, and maybe the purchaser shouldn't be compensated. So Rav Huna says to them, told them yes, and then he said no, he wasn't actually sure, right? So in other words, he wasn't really sure what Shmuel's reasoning was. So I think that's interesting, and the language around that is interesting, so just pay attention to that. We don't usually see something like that. Now the Gemara is going to bring a ruling of Shmuel on something else. Itmar, it was said, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel. Rav Nachman said in the name of Shmuel, Ma'ot Yeshlo, the purchaser has a right to the compensation for the money that he paid. Shvach Einlo, he doesn't have a right to the compensation of the improvements. Okay, so that's what we learned before. Afal Pisha Perishlo at Sashavah, even if the seller explicitly said that he accepts responsibility for the improvements. My Taima, what's the reason? Kaven to Karka Einlo, since the land is not the seller's, Charmau Tav Omeid the Notel. It would appear that the purchaser collects a fee for the use of the money, right? So here it's a little bit different than saying that there's an issue of interest, but it looks more like the purchaser was collecting a fee for the loan that he gave the seller. Okay, so this gives a little bit more detail than the previous ruling that we had of Shmuel, and the Gemara is going to come and challenge this. Eitvei Rava l'Rav Nachman. So Rava challenges Rav Nachman from a Mishnah in Gittin. Ein motzin, we do not collect la'achila peirot for the consumption of produce, v'l'shevach karkod, or for the improvement of land, v'l'mazon ha'isha v'habanot, or for food of a man's wives and daughters, minechasim eshubadim, right, from encumbered properties, right? So what does this mean? It refers to a property that was sold by a debtor, you know, subsequently to incurring a debt. So the debtor's unsold property, right, regardless of whether he owned it or when he incurred the debt, is called minechasim eshubadim, mipenei tikkun olam, because of the common good. Now, I really wanted to read this passage because if I had to write a PhD on Gemara, one of the things I would write about is the whole concept of tikkun olam, right? We use tikkun olam, we've mentioned this before in the podcast. Today it's used sort of in this very, let's say, like social justice sort of way today, generally seems to be somewhat affiliated with, let's say, more progressive politics. But that's really not how it's meant to be used in the Gemara, right? The way that the Gemara uses it, or here it's actually a Mishnah that's using it. What they're talking about here is that if somebody borrows money or has some type of financial obligation, okay, all of his property really becomes sort of encumbered to that debt, right? Like if he needs to pay it off and he doesn't have the money to do it, he would have to sell his property, right? So the debtor can't repay whatever that loan is, the creditor can come and collect the property from the buyer. When the debtor sold several pieces of property, right, the creditor collects property from whatever was sold less. And if the value of the property doesn't satisfy the total debt, the creditor goes to the next to last one. We talked about this actually in Bava Kamma. This was at the beginning of Bava Kamma. Okay. So essentially, what a buyer would basically do to make sure, basically, the buyer needs to figure out a way to protect his purchase against any seizure from a, you know, from a seller, right? By, you know, to make sure that he can cover any outstanding debts. And so if a seller, right, should basically sell his other properties, the seller's creditors can't collect to land from an earlier buyer, right? Because that just, you know, that's sort of like, in other words, somebody sells property and the buyer buys that property, then it turns out the seller actually owed money. It becomes an issue if that buyer would sort of like have to give that property, would have to give that property back. And so essentially what this mission is saying is that here is a series of areas where maybe somebody, you know, where we don't actually collect owed money from, okay, where we're not going to collect owed money. And one of the categories is from these encumbered properties, right? Because if we do, if we permit, you know, sold property to cover these things, there's kind of a way that like the buyer is actually never protected and people may actually stop buying property. So in order for that to not happen, the Chachamim basically make this takana that basically says you can't get money that's owed from Nechasim Meshubadim, right? You can't get money owed from Lemazon Haisha V'Habanot. It's all of these categories. Now, based on, so that's the Tikkun Olam part of it. Rava has a question based on this, which is, Mishubadehu Delo Mafkinan. So the Mishnah basically says that only from encumbered properties do we not collect. Hami B'nei Churin Mafkinan. But we do collect from properties that don't have this encumbrance, right? Meaning, you know, we right? So it seems that we do. V'ketani miha. And yet the Mishnah taught, right, the case of collection, l'shevach karkaot, for the improvement of land. So the Mishnah lists cases in which the Chachamim say you cannot take sold property, right? And one of them is v'l'shevach karkaot. So my, so what case is the Mishnah referring to? La bilokeach migazlan. Is it not referring to somebody who purchases land from a robber, right? And then claims compensation from the seller for his improvements that were seized by the rightful owner. So what this basically saying is that the Mishnah is saying that the purchaser of stolen property is compensated by the seller for his improvements. And this seems to contradict Rav Nachman. So the Gemara says, lo, no, right? The Mishnah isn't referring to one who purchases from a robber, the Valcho. Rather, it's referring to a case where the purchased land is improved and then seized by the seller's creditor. In this case, it doesn't look like interest if the purchaser is compensated by the seller for his improvements. Rav Nachman's ruling is that the purchaser of stolen property may not be compensated by the seller for the improvement, okay? But if it's a case of a Baal Chov, of a creditor, then you can actually pay it. The Gemara is going to go back and forth about this. It's going to object to this. It's going to have another objection. It's going to give an answer. This is what it's going to spend the rest of Amud Bet going through. But I think it's interesting to see, essentially, you know, that we have this, you know, on the one hand, we're talking about this whole idea that property can be seized or sort of properties returned, you know, if we find out that it was stolen and then sold. And then we have this other case, right? This other Mishnah from Gittin, which is essentially talking about what if somebody can't, you know, cover their debt, what are you allowed to take to cover that debt? Like, what is the creditor allowed to take? And we say, you know, and we have this list of all these things that you're not allowed to take because of Tikkun Olam. And so I see that there's sort of like this balance, like obviously if somebody steals land, of course, okay, you can't sell it. But I think we see this like sensitivity to debtors that's under this premise of Tikkun Olam, which is not the original halakha, but the Chachamim basically said like, we can't just allow that creditors can sort of seize from anybody that they want to see, you know, seize any type of property.
I just want to take a step back on the, pardon me, on the phenomenon of buying encumbered property, right? Like, I feel like, you know, in my naivete, I would say, why would you buy property that already has a lien on it or whatever other encumbrances on it? And I think that this is like a I think it's kind of like, for me anyway, a fallacy in the language, because it's perfectly normal, at least in our day and age, to buy a home from somebody who has a mortgage, right? Meaning we don't think of a mortgage as a lien on the property in that same way, but the bank owns a good portion of most people's purchased homes, or many people's purchased homes, and nobody thinks twice about entering into negotiations about that kind of, like, yes, you know, the person owns this amount of the home already, and this amount is really in hock to the bank. So I just wanted to say this because I've been thinking about it like as a puzzle for myself until I realized that, you know, it's not as strange as all that when we put it into our own vocabulary.
Yeah, I hear what you mean by that. I guess I just, it makes me a little bit nervous because I do think like the economic structure was different than what we have today. But I also do think when we try to think of like sort of, you know, I think one of the beauties of Gemara and law in general is like you would look to these types of Gemaras to think about like how would halacha deal with sort of some of these modern day situations, especially if it's a situation between, let's say, two, you know, halachically abiding Jews.
Well, also, I feel like it's a kind of thing like if you have, I don't know, if you have a seller who's got that everything he's trying to sell you is all mishuabad, right? Like it's all got somebody else who's the debtor, like he owes, he doesn't own anything outright, right? So I would say, stay away, go buy from somebody else, except for that presumes that there are other people to buy from who don't have their property in debt. And I can understand where if you're buying a homestead and you borrow money from just one guy, not from a bank, right? And then, or whatever. And then, you know, theoretically, that guy, I mean, not just theoretically, practically, that guy has to be paid back when you sell, right? If you haven't finished paying off the loan. So even if I got it wrong because the economic structures were different, I think that these cases are just too widespread to be able to advise Shimon, don't buy from Reuven, right? Like, nobody says that. Nobody says that Reuven is wrong or he's not Ne'aman, he's not trustworthy, right? This seems to be a normal kind of thing. And that's what I'm trying to get at.
Oh, that's interesting. Right. There's no judgment on what the person did. It's more just dealing with the consequence, but there's no judgment about how this actually happened.
And if somebody wants to come by my house right now, then I'm also going to say, oh, you know, a lot of that money is going to the bank. Do you hear what I'm saying? Like, again, it might not be really parallel, but nobody thinks it's a busha. It's an embarrassment to have a mortgage.
Okay. I have to think about that. And I think that's an interesting point. That's our DAF discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Reverend Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.